各位观众朋友大家好，欢迎收看美国观察，我是林森。首先来关注今天的重要新闻。美国总统拜登星期一表示，俄罗斯总统普京必须为他在乌克兰的野蛮残暴付出高昂的代价。乌克兰官员呼吁进一步加强对俄罗斯的制裁，包括欧洲国家切断从俄罗斯的能源进口。欧盟领导人已经建议禁止俄罗斯石油进口，但是几个成员国对俄罗斯能源的严重依赖阻碍了这些努力。乌克兰总统泽连斯基星期天向议会致辞时呼吁国际社会对俄罗斯实施更为严厉的制裁。波兰总统安杰伊·杜达在向同一场议会致辞时驳斥了有关基辅应该向俄罗斯割让领土以结束莫斯科入侵的观点。拜登总统与日本首相岸田文雄举行双边会谈之后，在联合记者会上针对如果中国武力犯台将如何处理，岸田文雄说将与美国合作。拜登总统更是表示美国将会军事介入。来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅发自东京的报道。
5月3号美日峰会之后，拜登总统以及日本首相岸田文雄召开联合记者会。在记者会上呢，岸田文雄多次的强调不能接受像乌克兰那样的事情发生在印太地区，尤其是发生在东亚。那么就被问到说，如果中国真的武力犯台，日本是否会协助？岸田文雄表示这方面日本要来跟美国合作。而拜登总统则是接着说呢，美国对于台湾的立场并未改变，支持台湾海峡的和平稳定，反对单方面改变现状。他也强调呢，对俄罗斯的制裁必须要坚持下去，因为这个不只是关于乌克兰，更是关于如果普京在做出这些野蛮暴行之后，制裁却没有持续，就会传达给中国一个信号。也就是说呢，如果他试图攻击台湾或武力占领台湾，也不用付出什么样的代价。那拜登说呢，中国现在就已经透过这个军机飞进台湾等行为来试水温，但是呢，美国对台湾是有承诺的。那拜登总统也强调说呢，这个美国虽然是支持一中政策，但是中国无权对台湾动武。
We support the one China policy. We support all that we've done in the past. But that does not mean, that China has the ability, the jurisdiction to go in and use force to take over Taiwan. So we stand firmly with Japan and with other nations that not to let that happen.And my expectation is it will not happen. It will not be attempted. My expectation is a lot of it depends upon just how strongly the world makes clear that that kind of action is going to result in long-term disapprobation by the rest of the community.
那记者就追问拜登总统说，那俄罗斯入侵乌克兰的时候呢，美国并没有军事介入，但是如果中国武力犯台，拜登总统是否会愿意进行军事介入？对此呢，拜登总统回应 ：Yes.
Yes.
You are.
That's a commitment we made. That's a commitment we made. We are not. Look, here's the situation.We agree with a one China policy. We signed on to it and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It will dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine.
而之后呢，美国之音询问了白宫，一位白宫资深官员告诉美国之音说，正如总统说的，我们的政策并无改变。他重申我们的一中政策以及我们对台湾海峡和平稳定的承诺，他也重申我们基于台湾关系法的承诺，提供台湾军事手段来自我防御。而在之后举办的这个印太经济框架的发表会之后呢，随行的白宫记者团也在询问这个将刚才总统对台湾的言论，不过呢，拜登总统是不发一言就离开了现场。而美国驻日本大使拉姆·伊曼纽尔是前来与白宫记者团交谈，不过呢，他是拒绝回应拜登总统针对台湾的言论。美国之音白宫记者黄毅，日本东京报道。
美国总统拜登正在继续他上任后的首次亚洲之行，与韩国总统尹锡悦和日本首相岸田文雄分别举行会晤。华盛顿研究机构史丁生中心高级研究员、东亚研究项目共同主任陈吉游记 对美国之音说，这是三国领导人会面进行三边合作以及交换关于其他问题看法的绝佳的机会。关于即将在东京举行的四方机制领导人峰会，陈吉游记认为问题的关键是如何重新改造四方机制，使其在某些政策协调领域保持可行性和稳健性，并且确保印度在这些领域中的继续参与。来看详细内容。
When President Biden visits South Korea later this month, he's going to meet with the brand new President Yoon Suk Yeol in Seoul. What kind of new Washington-Seoul relationship are we going to see?
I think under the previous administration in Seoul and the previous administration in the U.S., they had a very complicated, sometimes tense relationship.But with the new Biden administration, of course, Biden administration has been in place for the last 2 years. But then now with the Biden administration's renewed message to emphasize and prioritize alliances and partnership and strengthening those ties, and you have that on one hand in Washington. And then now on the other hand, we do have a South Korean, a new administration who seems to be standing much firmer.Vis-a-vis facing up the North Korean challenge. So I think the two countries have a very good, very good alliance conversation to have. And I think this is a great opportunity for two leaders to meet and share their perspectives on North Korea, trilateral cooperation with Japan, and other, amongst other issues.
Considering Russia's invasion of Ukraine,What kind of adjustment South Korea would want to make for better defense against possible aggression from North Korea? Will the South Korea have any ambition to enhance its military?
I think South Korea has been under the trajectory, even under the previous administration, to strengthen its military capabilities facing increasingly...provocative North Korea. Now with the Yoon administration, I think that effort will be only continue and if anything accelerated. And how that will be done, I think will be discussed amongst the two countries' alliance managers. But I think this is a very good opportunity for both leaders to send the message of what kind of tightening of cooperation the two countries are heading into.And I think one big standing issue would be the transfer of the operational control to South Korea, which now currently belongs to the United States and U.S. forces in Korea.
What about the United States? What would the United States want to do in the military alliance with South Korea when facing the potential threat from both China?And North Korea?
I think Washington definitely would like Seoul to begin to work more closely with Japan when it comes to either facing North Korean challenges or challenges from China. Under a previous administration in Seoul, Japan-South Korea relationship have been quite strained. And really, two government really hasn't had any dialogues going on amongst the high officials. So I think U.S. would definitely like to see that communication be resumed. And I read in the news recently that the Japanese foreign minister will visit South Korea for the first time in the last several years as a Japanese foreign minister. So hopefully this will be the start of the resumption.Of the more constructive relationship between Japan and South Korea, both of which are very important to the United States and their alliances in East Asia.
Let's talk a little bit more about Japan. Japan's Prime Minister Fumio Kishida is a foreign minister turned prime minister, and he has met with President Biden virtually just in January.So compared with you, the new president in Seoul, these two people know each other better. What will be on top of Biden's agenda to discuss with Kishida and vice versa?
I think Prime Minister Kishida really surprised many, even in for those of us in the United States who really believe that Japan's foreign policy stance with the United States is very, very closely aligned, that how Prime Minister Kishida's government has come out very, very firm vis-a-vis Russia as the ongoing crisis in Ukraine continues to unfold. And I think, frankly speaking, I think U.S. is quite appreciative of Prime Minister Kishida's effort to work with other partners in Indo-Pacific to form a broader coalition to support Ukraine on the principle of supporting democracy, supporting the international principles such as no use of force to change the status quo, including borders. Say no, firm no, to any kind of military aggression like the one we're seeing in Ukraine day to day. For instance, you know, Prime Minister Kishida just came back from a Southeast Asian visit, where each and every stop he talked about importance of Indo-Pacific region countries supporting Ukraine and the those universal values. So I think two leaders will talk a lot about how to continue to coordinate their approaches vis-a-vis Russia over the Ukraine crisis. But then, of course, there are some other trade and economic issues that needs to be discussed. For example, the last 2+2 statement, and I believe the last leader's statement talked about the formation of the economic 2+2. So I think what exactly that entails, I think it's still being hashed out between the two governments. So I think two leaders may spend a little bit of time about that. And last but not least, I think two leaders will spend a lot of time sharing their views on China and North Korea.
Talking about China, let's talk a little bit about Sino-Japan relations. For the situation around the Senkaku Islands and the East China Sea, it seems that the temperature may not be as high there as the Taiwan Strait or the South China Sea, but the potential conflict with China is still pretty real. Would the strategy of U.S. and Japan be updated considering now the situation in Ukraine?
I believe so. Even before the Ukraine crisis began, Japan was on schedule to revise its national security strategy by the end of this year. And along with that, there are two defense policy guideline documents, policy one national defense program guidelines, and their acquisition documents, midterm defense program, are also going to be revised. And this was all on schedule even before Ukrainian crisis. So now with this current situation in Ukraine, and increasingly more people are talking about what kind of quote-unquote lessons learned that China might take away from the international responses to Ukrainian crisis. I think two countries have a lot to talk about indeed. And even before those Ukrainian situation, some officials in both governments are talking about potentially updating again the bilateral defense cooperation guidelines. So depending on how Japan's national security strategy, its revision comes out, another revision, consultation for the updating those bilateral defense cooperation guidelines can also come into play. So I think that might be actually one of the important issues that two leaders might discuss. However, their respective defense ministry may also have a chance to discuss when probably two defense ministers will meet at the sideline of Shangri-La in June as well, although nothing is officially announced yet.
We have learned that during his Asia trip, President Biden is also set to meet in Tokyo with other Quad leaders of Japan, Australia, and India in a gathering of the so-called Quad scheme that's being kind of revitalized at President Biden's initiative, because Quad has not been an effective scheme ever since its inception, particularly with India being the most reticent member. Do you think Biden will be able to successfully retool it for the U.S. purpose?
I think that will be definitely President Biden's purpose, but I think more importantly, I think this meeting's Quad leaders meeting in Tokyo will be very, very important to for all leaders to think about the way forward for the Quad. I think U.S., Japan, Australia are all somewhat frustrated about India's responses to Ukrainian crisis so far. But then they definitely do not want to alienate or isolate India in that Quad structure, only to make them more comfortable or, you know, only to encourage them on that more reticent trajectory. So I think they are one of the key thing is, as you mentioned, how to perhaps retool the Quad to keep it viable and robust in certain areas of policy coordination, and make sure that India continues to be engaged in those areas. But then I think all three leaders in the U.S., Japan, and Australia are a little bit more clear-eyed about the potential for the Quad, or perhaps lack thereof, when it comes to a more of a hard security.
In the near future, what could be done for the Quad to be more effective in dealing with China? Do you think it is necessary or possible for the United States to kind of retool Quad into something like the NATO?
I think given the reticence of coming out of India, even before Ukrainian crisis, I think retooling Quad to something like NATO probably may be a bridge too far, at least for the short term. I think it is a good goal to have, to aspire to, medium to long term. So this will be a very much of a step-by-step process. And then I think the India would always be the, I think, the center of the attention for the all three countries of whether they could continue to engage India in this endeavor.
欢迎回到美国观察。联合国人权事务高级专员巴奇莱特星期一抵达中国，预计他的访问将集中关注有关中国在西北新疆地区侵犯人权的指控。中国政府表示，巴奇莱特的访问将采取闭环方式，没有记者随行。在为期六天的访问中，巴奇莱特将前往新疆喀什和首府乌鲁木齐。联合国人权专家指责中国在新疆拘留了100万维吾尔族穆斯林，并且虐待他们。中国对此否认。巴奇莱特办公室的推特说，他将讨论敏感重要的人权问题，并表示他希望此次访问将有助于我们共同努力促进中国和全球的人权。人权组织警告说，巴奇莱特的访问有粉饰中国在新疆侵犯人权的威胁。人权组织在他出发前曾经呼吁暂缓访问。曾经在新疆学习并因为参加丝绸之路好声音竞赛而在新疆维吾尔自治区广为人知的美国女博士伊丽丝·安德森，维吾尔名字叫做娜扎凯提，会说维吾尔语，擅长弹奏维吾尔乐器都塔尔以及演唱维吾尔歌曲。返回美国后，为了帮助失去联系的维吾尔族朋友而投身 人权团体为争取维吾尔族人权向全世界发声。
Are the melodies of Uyghur music, the very intricate and heavily ornamented melodies, are some of the things that drew me to it. Because there are more tones and microtones being sung and performed than my own, you know, ear really can even hear sometimes as someone trained in Western music and in very particular styles of it. And so I was really drawn to these melodies. As an undergraduate, between my sophomore and junior years of college, I traveled to Urumqi and taught English in a one-month program at Xinjiang University. Prior to my visit to the Uyghur region, I had no exposure to either the Uyghur or Chinese languages. I knew nothing going in. However, I was a music student at the time. I majored in voice as an undergraduate and also have a lot of instrumental music background. I play a number of wind instruments. So while I was there, my students and the friends I made took a special interest in introducing me to Uyghur music. PhD in ethnomusicology and Central Eurasian studies at the time. At first, I spent a year affiliated at Xinjiang University. So it was the Xinjiang Folklore Research Center. And then in my second year, I moved my affiliation from Xinjiang University to the Xinjiang Arts Institute, where I then enrolled in classes in muqam research and muqam performance, basically in classical Uyghur music. And I proceeded to spend 5 semesters enrolled as a student there, taking classes alongside local Uyghur students. In 2014, I competed in the first season of a televised singing competition called The Voice of the Silk Road. The Voice of the Silk Road was aired on Xinjiang television and financed and produced by a very prominent member of the Uyghur intellectual and cultural elite. The producers were filming the first season in an auditorium on the campus of the Xinjiang Arts Institute where I was studying. And just a few days before the first round was going to start, some of my classmates at the Arts Institute started to say to me, "Hey, you should go on the show. You should go on the show. That would be interesting. That would be fun." I made a very rash decision to appear on this show. Then a couple months later, the episode aired on TV, and, you know, overnight, my life completely changed. It aired on a Friday night, and I went out to run some errands, you know, to go to the market and buy some vegetables and meat on a Saturday morning. And as I was walking down the street, I heard people saying, "Oh my gosh, oh my, it's her. It's her. It's the woman from TV." And that would continue to happen for the rest of the time that I lived in the region. I went back for a very, very brief visit in 2018 to Urumqi, Qashqar, other cities, and the same thing happened even in 2018. You know, that I would be walking down the street and people would say, oh my gosh, wait, it's her. This was prior to the mass internment campaign that rolled out in 2017 and everything that has come after it, right? So Uyghurs were starting to disappear. I also had a situation in which I myself was interrogated by two police officers from a pretty high-level bureau in Urumqi, and afterward, when I told some of my Uyghur friends about it and about how uncomfortable it made me, in response, my friends said, ah, okay, well, maybe you know just a little bit more about what it's like to be Uyghur now. I count some of my friends in the region as some of my dearest friends, you know, anywhere in the world. Very close to some of the people that I met, you know, while I was living there. And initially, when I came back to the United States, we stayed in touch with one another. I miss my friends. I fear for them. I wonder what has become of them, and I just don't know.
Yildan boshlab mening u yerdagi ustozlarim va do'stlarimning ba'zilari qo'lga olindi va ba'zilari izdiraksiz yo'qolib ketdi. Men har kuni ularni o'ylayman va ko'nglim shunchalik yarim bo'ldi.
I decided to take this route, to walk down this path, because I felt like it was something I could do to contribute to, you know, the global response to this horrible crisis. I felt like it was a way that I could use, you know, languages I had learned, right, and knowledge I had gained as an area specialist, while also doing things that would tangibly help my friends, my neighbors, and, you know, those lovely people who would see me walking down the street and say, oh my gosh, wait, that's her. That's the woman from television. Is that no one government or institution or even coalition has yet been able to do enough to stop these ongoing abuses. We still are seeing evidence of really grave violations of human rights. What we're up against is something so big, so all-encompassing, that it's going to take much more of a response than we have even seen yet. Ирк болса атар болса, су башлыса ташмаса, су башлыса ташмаса, мәш болса майнда болса, һәм кеше ишоглыса. Мәш болса майнда болса, һәм кеше ишоглыса.
今天美国观察的全部内容就是这些，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。